It's Mike Shope.
Last night at 12:30 in the morning, I ate a can of mushrooms. I did. Pieces and stems, if you're wondering. As opposed to buttons. It was pieces and stems, which will be my next year's fantasy football team name.
Pieces and stems.
Pieces and stems.
And the Bulldog.
I should be ashamed to admit this publicly, but whatever. How long have we been doing this? I'm a junkie. I can't be trusted.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Creeping closer to training camp and the upcoming Bills season. Love to hear your thoughts, your feelings, your vibes. 803-0550. Had a esteemed fantasy guest today, Sigmund Bloom. That guy knows it all. So it's even a little, I think we're in the fantasy window. It's Friday for the next, 5 weeks or so.
It's almost August. There's that. And it feels like, it feels like, you should be, reading. I don't know, the magazines on the racks?
I mean, probably. I don't know.
Are there still racks?
Are there magazines? Are there racks? Yes. There are, yes.
I haven't gotten the RotoWire delivery. I don't know if that still comes.
Oh, wow. Shots fired. Let me see if I can get that to you. I know the right people on that one.
Right.
The guy who runs it is a Bills fan. He's a Buffalo guy. Tim Schuler. Theo's there now. Jeff Erickson, Mario. Lots of those guys have been on with us.
Mm-hmm.
They would love to get you a magazine.
It shows up, I think, every year. So,
do you know where your mailbox is?
I'm sitting in it. This is my mailbox.
Room?
Yeah, I think.
Does it get delivered to this room? It's very possible the person who would have done that for you in the past doesn't work here anymore.
Often enough, it is our boss who will walk in with mail like that. Like, hey, you guys got stuff. And so, I don't know, I'm on the lookout.
I think my mailbox is in there, but I have not attended to it in possibly years.
I definitely have a mailbox in there. There is a broken pair of headphones in there. That's it.
You don't get any mail?
No.
Get Bulldog some mail. He's dying for it. Look at him. He's begging you. Here's Jason with us. Hi, Jason.
Hey, so BB, happy Friday. How you guys doing?
Good, man. Happy Friday to you, too.
Hey, I just want to get your thoughts on some of the things I've been thinking about with Joe Brady lately and see what you think. First off, we haven't talked about it in a while, but, the first, vote of confidence or yeah, Joe, good for you. Was when that story about Vrabel ripping up his name tag came out. Kind of like, Joe Brady didn't do anything, but it looks like, hey, bully, that's what you get, with the whole Diana Rossini incident. And just makes me think, I wonder, did Brady happen to tip somebody off at the pool? Say, hey, man, you might want to get out there and see that. But anyhow, so after the playoff game in Denver and McDermott getting fired, I was upset about it, but I kind of understood because McDermott, although he was very consistent, he got us there every year. He could never get us over the hump. So fine, you let him go. But then they bring in Joe Brady, making him the head coach. I'm like, oh, here we go. The guys yesterday were rehashing the Denver game. The guys in the morning were rehashing the Denver game and talking about all the consecutive stops that the defense gave the team and they couldn't find a way to win. It was not the defense's fault. It was the offense's fault. It was their turnovers, in my opinion. But, and then they start talking about Carmichael and how he likes to throw to the tight or to the running backs all the time. We have the quarterback with the biggest arm in the league, and we don't throw the ball more than 5 yards down the field. It's so infuriating. I couldn't stand it last year with Joe Brady's offense. And now it just feels like it's going to get even worse. And I'm just curious, if this thing goes bad this year, could it go bad enough that they could potentially fire Brady? I'm not even giving the guy a chance. I know that, but I just don't have a lot of confidence in him based on what I've seen him do so far. And I just am curious what you guys think about that.
I hope you won't be upset that I have not thought for 5 seconds about what kind of season the Bills would have for them to make a coaching change.
Why are you guys so negative?
I mean, that's where all that ends is how does he get fired?
I don't know.
I mean, camp starts Tuesday. How does he get fired?
I don't know.
How does he get? Let's answer it.
That whole thing was a ride.
I couldn't even make out the first stuff.
I made it out. It was horrific.
How?
But, yeah. I don't know, man. I mean, you run into me in a bar. You ask me straight up, like, is there a scenario where Joe? Yeah, they go 5-12. Like, the bottom completely falls out of it, and it's a disaster. Like, assuming everyone's healthy, and they just have some incredibly terrible year, like, yeah, that could happen. It's just like a half of a percent chance I think it happens, but it could happen.
I can't conceive of that season because of Allen. If Allen's hurt, he's off the hook.
Right, yeah, that's why I said if everyone's healthy and they have that year, then...
Even if it's just Allen, it's healthy.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
What is he going to... escape if his guards get hurt or something? I don't know. I can't even really conceive of a season where they lose so often. How would it happen if their defense is horrible? Is that going to be on him either? Like, how do the Bills... You asked. We take the calls we get, right?
Right.
So how do the Bills have that level bad, like Browns level bad season? Without an injury, like a Josh Allen injury, if the defense is 32nd and they just can't handle it, but would that reflect on Brady that seriously? You know, nobody wants to make a change after 1 year. Brady's been here. They didn't bring him in. They brought him up. So I don't know. Yeah. I almost can't even conceive of a year where that – I haven't thought about it for 5 seconds. Like I just
– Yeah. Like even when I'm – you know, I guess I would, you know, have to be qualified as, you know, I'm balking at pessimistic, but like sort of, I'm struggling to just assume it's all going to be full speed ahead, go win your 12 games with all the new that is here. But even with that, like in my head, if I've never made it clear, they're still like winning 10 games. You know, it's just not all great. It's not all buttoned up because I think. It can be a lot to ask to get all of that right away, especially the scheme change on defense, which may require some different personnel year over year. And you it's a lot to add in 1 year and just get all that right. So, but even that isn't a doomsday scenario to me. It's just a, you know, you're scuffling to make it in as opposed to just ruling the roost. You know, that's in the window to me, but that is not what this caller is talking about. He's talking about a, you know, whatever. Do you want me to try to explain what he was getting at? Okay, good. I really don't want to. I think we'll all be better without me repeating it.
I heard one word name that I know it tells me I don't want to hear it explained to me, and that's okay. Russini.
Yep.
Like, I have no interest in bringing that back up. I have the Denver box up. Who scored touchdowns in that game for Denver?
Mims. Right, that was the big one at the end.
Minute left.
Yeah.
To go ahead. The Bills tied it after that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm dead on the other two. I think I could, if I had been given all day or, you know, several minutes to just start spitting out names of Denver players, I would have gotten one of them, but not the other.
Yeah.
The other is not familiar to me at all. But I watched that game. I'm pretty sure I watched that game.
Is there like some depth tight end or something?
Offensive tackle, even.
Okay. Well, that...
Frank Crum.
Oh, boy.
So that would have been like a tackle eligible kind of play?
I would imagine that's what that is, yeah.
And Lil Jordan Humphrey.
Okay.
Caught one late in the first half to give Denver the lead, presumably after a turnover. Or then there was their turnover after that, and they kicked the field goal. That's the Allen... Oof, that game. Man, how'd you lose? Well, that's how.
You gave the ball away like crazy.
Quarterback on a broken ankle? Let me put to you, thanks, Jason. Let me put to you the question we talked about with Sam. If you can access some Super Bowl odds, who has the right to be ticked off? So the Rams are the favorite. Sam liked it when I gave him time to think about it. I'll do the same for you. I owe you at least the same.
I mean, I already, I'm familiar because I looked at the odds when we were talking to Sam.
Okay.
So it's not, but I do want to access it again, which is just going to take a minute here, just so I have it because I did have a thought when I first opened it. The first team I thought of, and I'll tell you in a minute. I just want to make sure I can confirm it.
Miami.
No, it's definitely not Miami.
Plus 35,000.
I don't know how much higher this team should be, but San Francisco being plus 1,600.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Seven. I mean, they're tied with Kansas City and the Chargers. So, it's not, you know, they just happen to be the last team that's at that number. There's three teams at that number, the two I just mentioned in San Francisco.
On DraftKings, they're higher, 1,900, okay. Tied for 11th.
I think that feels a little harsh to me. Like, that team is almost always excellent year over year. They've had injury years where everything completely derails. And, like, that's in a separate category. And I don't think the odds are predicated on, oh, I think Brock Purdy's going to get hurt again. I mean, everything is baked in. But I just doubt that would move them down a lot. Just, you know, a threat of injury. Because you can do that with anyone. So I feel like they're my answer when you brought that up to Sam. That was the team I thought.
Okay.
I think maybe they should get a little more respect. Like, I don't know. Maybe they should be ahead of the Ravens and the Chargers. They're even with the Chargers, at least in the odds I'm looking at. But maybe they should be ahead of the Ravens.
And DraftKings, the Ravens are plus 1,000, 10-1, and San Francisco is 19-1. It's almost double. The Ravens are definitely not the answer to this.
No, I don't think
they have no room to complain that they're not getting enough love in the betting markets. They always get the love in the betting markets. One of these years, maybe they'll actually do it.
Like, I would not say, as much as I'm bullish on Cincinnati, I'm not put out by their it's been a while since they've been a cream of the crop type team. So
they're not being sold short.
No, I don't think so. I mean, their odds are long, and they deserve to be. The other team that caught my eye is another NFC team, and that would be the Bears.
I like that.
The Bears were excellent last year, right? I mean, maybe excellent is too much. But
no, they were great. They were good.
They were really, really good, if not great. And
they've won their division. They won a playoff game.
They've got a lot coming back. Like, there's a lot to like there, I think. And they're below the Cowboys here. At FanDuel, yep, anyway. I've got them at 2,700.
I'm 24. Dallas 25. Chicago 24.
So like that feels a little tough, you know. Jacksonville's down there too, and I like Jacksonville, but you know they're Jacksonville.
30-1.
No, I don't. Lawrence has been around longer. It's more known who he is and what he is and what he's capable of.
I would say them.
Yeah.
Because on DraftKings they rank 17th. Among 32 teams, favorite to the Cardinals, mm-hmm. Rams to the Cardinals. They come in just inside the bottom half of the league. And what is the problem? It's not their division.
Right.
Last year they won 13 games.
There is, again, we're looking at different odds. I cannot get friendly with that DraftKings app, no matter what I do. It freezes on me constantly. I've dumped it and reinstalled it a dozen times. I just can't. Anyway, so I'm back on FanDuel because at least it works for me. Maybe I have a iPad problem. I don't know, but everything else works besides their app. So anyway, that aside, there is a cliff at FanDuel. Like, the Bears and the Jaguars are both 27-1. And then the next team is 45-1.
Okay, same here, pretty much.
Tampa is at least on this list. Tampa and the Colts, and the Vikings, for that matter, are at that same number.
Yep.
So there's a cliff there, at least, you know, that Jacksonville is, you know, not in. They're not in the canyon with those other teams.
I'm just thinking about, like, how fans, you know, what have we heard fans complain about over the years? One thing with the Bills is a lack of national attention or respect, right? Like, we sort of walk around a little bit bitter that, not so much anymore, although probably it's the same. I think people who see things that way may always see things that way, but just like, well, you know, why don't they get any respect? That would be a Jacksonville fan, because that's a team, yep, that would suffer from that. It's always, you know, we wear teal, that kind of stuff. Like, mm-hmm, we're always looked down on. And some teams, I mean, Sam's not here to vouch for this, but some teams always are being bet. You know, like the national team, so to speak. That's the Bears. Last week, he and I did talk about the Bears in this context and how the Bears are like a public team, as he put it, for the first time. Maybe Pittsburgh, maybe Green Bay. I mean, certain teams, mm-hmm, that you go out, whether it's on your phone or you go to Vegas or something, and you put $50, $100 on your favorite team to win it all, and there are fans of those teams everywhere. Dallas
maybe. Is definitely one of those teams, I would say, yes.
And Jacksonville is the opposite.
Right.
So they seem better to me than 30-1. And
if I were one of their fans, I would agree.
Be like, what have we got to do? Like, they did lose the Bills game. They did lose in the first round, but they're right there, toe-to-toe. And, you know, I think we're good. So I would say that to the question, whose fans have the greatest right to complain about this pecking order? I would say Jacksonville's up there. I think I would say Denver.
Yeah,
they're at 20-1, having just won the conference in the regular season.
Being a starting quarterback's broken ankle away from going to the Super Bowl, probably.
Yep. I mean, the Chiefs and the Chargers, there's not much separation, but Denver is third of those teams. And, you know like, hi, maybe you didn't watch football last year, but 14-3. And, you know, what got worse for Denver? Jalen Waddle showed up, by the way.
Right.
Like, I don't know. They would be one of these
teams.
There's
no backward step there at all that I've heard about or that I can really think about for them.
So, right. I mean, their division is harder, it would, you know, on paper, I think, than the Jacksonville one.
Right. I guess if you expect a Chiefs rebound, then that maybe is – maybe that's a lot of it. Maybe that's most of it.
Yeah.
Is that the Chiefs – you expect the Chiefs to be back, therefore, and the Chargers are also getting some love, and so it's just – yeah, it's tougher. Yeah, one of the things I like about Jacksonville, like I'm – you're talking me into maybe doing something with Jacksonville because I'm down on Houston – so if I'm going to be down on Houston,
but
somebody's going to do that, you know, get that division, and that, maybe it's Jacksonville again.
Well, spend your money if you so choose, but you forgot that you love Cam Ward.
I don't love Cam Ward enough to think that they're going to do anything, like, really big. I just think, like, today, this year will be a step forward, and they'll feel like going into next year, okay, we got our guy. That's what I predict for Cam Ward.
Interesting. So, can I get you Jacksonville's schedule here?
Sure.
What kind of, like, play it out in your mind. Like, what kind of season is this? Week one, home to the Browns.
Okay.
Better win.
Okay, yeah.
Survivor candidate, right?
Yep.
I think the line is something, maybe 4.5 only, but survivor candidate. Week two at Denver.
Okay. They won there last year, but tough.
They did.
Yep.
They'll be an underdog.
Yep.
I bet.
I would too.
Week three, New England. Week four at Cincinnati. Week five in London, Philadelphia.
Oh, boy.
Week six in London, Houston. Bye week, Colts, Ravens away on a Thursday night. Short week at Baltimore. At Tennessee, at the Giants. Tennessee again. All right. At Chicago. Tough. December. Pittsburgh on a Monday night. At Houston, at Dallas. Washington, Colts.
That
sort of feels 500-ish.
That is a hard schedule. Yeah, the front end of it, I don't know how many games you listed before. Right after you got to the Baltimore short week, and then it's a bye? Is that what you said?
The bye's early. The bye's after the two London games.
Oh, okay, sorry. I don't know. If they can get out of that front end of the schedule, like two games above 500, maybe they're in great shape. But that is going to be a heavy lift, I think.
If they can get to 5-2 going to Baltimore with, you know, maybe the Eagles. I'm not a big Eagles guy right now. Who knows if Denver is really that good. New England is another one. Houston, they're close to being on par with these teams, I think, Jacksonville.
Yep.
So if I can get to 5-2, then Baltimore on the Thursday night, then Titans, Giants, Titans. Okay.
Yeah,
I've got Pittsburgh again.
Kind of catch your breath
Colts
a little
again.
Bit there. Yeah.
Now I'm in the playoffs.
Right.
That might be what I need to get.
That front end
the playoffs.
Is harsh. Yeah. Yeah, I'm inclined to still like them. I mean, I don't know if they can get Brian Thomas Jr. right. You know, like because, like, really, right, the story was, like, Meyer showed up and sort of that was it. He's, you know, and we got, is it Parker Washington and, like, whatever else they've got there. It's nice. So, I don't know, like, maybe they still end up where they ended up last year at the trade deadline, calling teams. I think they were shopping Brian Thomas Jr. last fall. Maybe they end up doing the same thing, or maybe he just carves out a spot there, and it's like they're loaded. Because, like, if he's anything like he was his rookie year, that's nasty. Like, they are, they could be nasty. Like, they got guys, any one, like, three different guys that go for 100 yards any week, I think.
Yeah, if Washington's good, I had Mike Dempsey last Friday, and he absolutely thinks so. Came on big time late in the year. Didn't do anything until that. Hasn't ever done anything until that, but did happen. Travis Hunter, they need him more on defense, apparently.
Right.
But that's something that could also change. And then Myers. And, oh, the big, you know, Bulldog, the big one, though, is Bashal Tootin. What's going to happen in that backfield? Some of us, don't raise your hand because you're driving. Some of us have invested fairly heavily in this young man and would like to see him get a starting role, if not a bell cow role, with some pass-catching upside.
Well, Etienne's gone.
Gone, New Orleans.
So who? What's the...
Chris Rodriguez, who was a backup in Washington, on and off the practice squad forever, and he might be goal line. And then you have LaQuint Allen from Syracuse going into his second year that could also be a thorn in the Tootin side, the Tootin camp. I wanted to get to Tootin Common.
Good God.
I had to just sort of give up and say that I was thinking about it. Well, I mean, all the fan, everybody in fantasy is like obsessed with Jacksonville's, with this guy and like what will happen. Tootin people, Rodriguez people, even LaQuint Allen people.
Wow.
If you remember that playoff game.
I don't know any of these people.
No, you don't want to know these people.
I'm glad.
If you remember that playoff game, whenever they gave the ball to Bashal Tootin, it was hot. Like that, I've been going on these shows saying all the Jaguars had to do to beat the Bills was just keep doing that, but they didn't, and you know they lost. So I think he looks like somebody that could be really good. In which case, more reason to
like them.
To like them. Yep. We like Brian Koziol. So he has his annual Duster challenge, putting challenge tonight at Glen Oak.
Yes, yes.
It might be already underway. He's out there.
Okay, yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what time it's there. I was there last year. I took the day off
to putt.
To pull. I golfed at like 2 o'clock, and so we could be there, Owen and I, for this event. And I think Owen is on his way out there too to take part again this year. With maybe your, I think Joe Calley and maybe Sneaky Joe are also from the morning show. The morning show that's not on vacation because I think Jeremy's away this week.
They're all there otherwise.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm glad you thought to call Brian today, because when we talked to him on Monday, when we hung up, what did I say to you? Like, oh, I wanted to give Brian a chance to promote his event on Friday.
Here it comes.
At Glen Oak, so we'll do that now. Yeah.
We will do that after sports. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. This is WGR. I'm just going to tell you, when told Red Sox Blue Jays from Fenway is an Apple TV game tonight, Bulldog pumped his fist like he is.
I made noises. There was a little. I got to step back. I think I did this for people watching on the stream. Like I did the. I did my legs.
Practically the Macarena.
I did. Yeah. Right. It was awkward but genuine. It was honest. It was an honest reaction.
Yankees Phillies also on Apple tonight, separately. I mean, one's at 6:30, the other's at 7. But the world is so fancy now, they can just do that.
All right.
Even though they're both right there.
That, I cannot wait. Part of that was, you could have told me they're on and some other stream, and I'd be like, oh, well, good. But you wouldn't have gotten the dance. The picture on Apple is just so good. It's so good.
Too bad you're not there. You could try this new red velvet cream cheese cake in a can that they have.
Can we just stop?
I see this from Lucy Burge.
Can we just
retweeting
stop?
Fenway? Red velvet cream cheese cake in a can.
Ah, nothing like that on a nice 90-degree humid summer day.
You drink that?
Let me get some cake.
No, you got to have a plastic fork.
In
you
a
don't
can?
Drink that.
I don't know.
They have a lot of things at Glen Oak, but not this. Maybe Brian will get to Tim Freeze and suggest some cake in a can out there.
What is going on at ballpark? Cake in a can? We get the sushi push pops in Chicago.
Yeah,
like that just sounds like sushi, that sounds like a bacteria fest to me. That just sounds horrible.
Brian Koziol with us on the West Her Hotline, a popular event in the golf season every year locally is this Duster Challenge, where you can putt and win and raise money. And Brian, I believe you're out at the golf course now. Are we underway?
We are. We just opened up the putting green, so people are out practicing. We're starting officially with the tournament play, we'll call it, at 6 o'clock. We're super pumped. We got 108 golfers. We've sold it out now for the fourth year in a row. And we're raising money for PGA Hope, which is giving veterans golf experience to kind of help them transition back to normal life after serving our country. So even things like giving them necessary equipment or carts or special things to enable them if they have any sort of physical disabilities that might have happened during the time of serving our country. So we're happy to do that. We raised over $7,000 last year. We're looking to hopefully increase that this year. I know Bulldog and Owen did it last year. Owen's actually here right now putting. He, I was just checking FanDuel a few minutes ago. Owen is actually right now moved into the top 10 for the putting favorites here out of the 108. So I'm expecting big things from him tonight.
All right. He should have he played there, I think, twice recently. Both times weren't with me, but he should have a good feel for the greens there. So I know it's the practice green, but still, whatever. So I like his. Although last year we both played in this after playing a round of golf there, and that he made it to the. Did he make it far? He did pretty well, I think.
Yeah,
I crapped out. I was terrible.
Yeah, we pick 108, and then we pick the after everybody putts, we take the best 16 scores. And then we do little mini match plays, like 1 versus 16, 2 versus 15, and so on. And I think Owen, he definitely made the top 16. He might have even advanced even to the top 8, I think, before he eventually got knocked out. But, yeah, he had a good good performance last year.
The kid's a decent putter. I got to give him that.
Yeah.
I have just thought of something I've never thought of really before. When, like, Bulldog was talking and Brian, and, like, he, you know, he's good on the greens, and then, oh, this is just the practice green. What level of responsibility does a golf course have to basically have its practice green be speed wise, maybe whatever else there is, like the real greens, if you will, on the golf course? Like, is it sort of like a given that would be the case? Or, I mean, do some places treat putting greens differently, just like the practice green gets short shrift or something and we don't really care? I mean, I don't think Glen Oak would be like that. What do you know about this, Brian?
Yeah, I don't want to speak for course superintendents, but I would think that the course superintendents are trying to essentially replicate what you're going to get out of the golf course, because part of the warm-up is that you're learning the conditions and the speed. So I think that's probably something that I would guess if you asked any course superintendent. You'd like your putting green to act similarly to what you're going to get out on the real golf course. So I think that's probably – now, for this contest, Matt Bush is the superintendent here. He actually cut it a few extra times. For those that are familiar with the stimp meter number, he actually just did it at 14, which is kind of what we see at Augusta. Yeah. He just cut it and cut it and cut it. He said, let's make it fast and let's have some fun with it. So it's right now it's faster than what you'd see out on the course. But I think you're right. I mean, you'd like to have the putting green act like you're going to expect when you get out onto the course.
I think even at Delaware Park, the practice green is similar enough. I mean, a lot of my rounds there are very early in the morning, and it's often wet in the morning, and then by the time you get to the 13th hole, you know, stuff's been baking in the sun all day, and it's a very different thing, but that's not the golf course's fault. So, yeah, I would think most courses certainly effort to make it that way.
Yeah, I think so. And obviously, you know, there's the range and there's the chipping area, too, here. Glen Oak's got a huge practice facility. So I think it also probably determines on staffing and, you know, how much maybe area square footage you have on your putting green and all that sort of stuff. But I got to think that's probably, Mike, I know you used the word responsibility. I think that's probably a good word to use. Like, you'd want them to try to get it as close as it can to whatever course conditions actually are out on the golf course.
Mm-hmm. And stimp meter, by the way, Brian, you dropped this on us last week, too, talking during the Open Championship. The higher, the faster. And 14's pretty fast. You said like Augusta. So I can't exactly picture it, but I think what I've got here is a device where you set it on the green and roll a ball down it, and how far it goes tells you the speed?
Yep. We actually just did that about an hour ago. So it looks like, I want to say, like a yardstick, and there's a little slot that you kind of leave the ball in, and then you just let it go, and the ball rolls out. And you do it three times, and then you kind of take the average of the three and say, okay, how far did it go? And then you go the other direction, and then you average those two, and that's where that number comes from.
All right.
right. Stint meter. Listen to what you're learning out there
I
today.
I just learned something. I love this, I've never loved golf more. I might have loved golf more the last 2 years than I do this year. I'm just having a rocky year. But nonetheless, I never knew how they did that, like what it was. So, yeah.
It's really just kind of old school, just a little device that it looks like a yardstick with a little channel that the ball just rolls down, and then you just see how far it rolls out. And you just do it one direction, then you come back the other. You want to do it on as flat of a spot as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go one direction, the other direction, and then average the two and see how far they went. And that's where that number comes from. Like I said, last week, like the Open Championship, those Lynx ones usually are like between 10 and 11. I would say average PGA Tour event, maybe 12, 12 and a half. And then, you know, like, again, the fastest they might ever play is like 14, kind of thing like that.
Yeah.
It was named for someone, the inventor, whose name was Stimson back in the 30s.
All right. I'm going to take that as you really Googled that and didn't make that up.
Correct.
Okay. The good news for the people competing in this event at Glen Oak tonight, the Duster Challenge, Brian, is that Michael Kim obviously will not be there because he's just fresh off of 59 this morning in Minnesota. 21 putts on 18 holes. I mean, my God, that is some work.
Insane. Yes. We were chatting about that 59. It was, for those that didn't see it, it was a long putt, and he gave it speed. He's like, I was not going to be short. It's funny, like, normally you'd think golfer would be pretty, you know, restrained in terms of worrying about his score. He literally said afterwards, he's like, I kind of didn't worry about what was going to happen after the hole. Like, he was thinking, like, if I three putt, oh, well, I got a chance to make history here. I'm going to try to break 60 and get my name kind of on that magical number. And it went in. It was
cool.
It went in with a lot of speed. But, yeah, kudos to him. And you know what? It's most of the time that you see the 59, it's on par 70s. This is a par 71. So even more, a little maybe more impressive than what most of those 59s have come on par 70s.
I wish the broadcasts last weekend would have paid homage to that a little bit more often, because there were the 362s and lowest round in major championship history. I mean, you know, there are yards and there are yards per game. And if it's a par 70 like last week, naturally, mm-hmm. you have a better chance. Just like how they don't sometimes refer to stuff like that when there are more teams in the playoffs or just more Ryder right. Cup. Oh, we've had more extra time games than ever. You added 50% more teams. Let's try to be honest about this.
Right.
Well, I know it's not the Open anymore because I'm watching this thing today and Scheffler is making everything. So whatever his problem was,
he's a little sketchy from in close, but his putting has been better.
Yeah, every time I look up, he's making a putt. So that's great. Thanks. Cool. Good for you.
Yeah, appreciate Scotty waiting a week to get his putting mojo back. Bulldog, that gave us a little extra in our wallet. Thank you very much.
For sure, man. He didn't lose by much. Like we would have been $50 lighter for sure.
He went to the 72nd hole down one,
right?
Despite missing 20 makeable putts in 4 days. Is that too many? I mean, it just
looked... No. I you might even be underestimating Mike. I mean, you and I talked Thursday and Friday, and I felt like every time you asked me about Scheffler, I was like, well, how many makeable birdies did he have today that he missed? And, you know, we're sitting here probably saying a half dozen or more each day. Yeah. I mean, he definitely, if he just putted even slightly even below average, he's probably winning back-to-back Opens.
Runaway winner. All right, Brian. Well, congrats to you on this. It's too late to get involved, right? I mean, you're underway
you
out there.
It's sold out, right?
Sold out.
Yeah. In terms of participation, it's over. However, if people want to come, if they have nothing to do, literally, we're going to be going for about 3 hours. We got lights, we got music, we've got about 25 golf courses that donated foursomes. So if people want to come and hang out, and we've got drinks and food, and they can buy into the raffles or the 50-50. We got chairs all around the green. So if, literally, if you're around Glen Oak tonight and you got nothing going on, you can come watch. We'll have the lights going on for the match play portion later on tonight. So yeah, we'd love to have anybody come out. By the way, if anybody does want to donate, I should answer your question, Mike. Duster with a D, DusterChallenge.com. You can go and you can just make a donation, $5, $10, anything. We would love to have you if you want to help support PGA Hope.
Cool. Where's Tee to Green tomorrow?
We are at Lancaster Country Club tomorrow morning, 7 to 8.
Thanks, Brian. Enjoy the night.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you letting me come on. Have
You're
a good
welcome.
Night.
Said he has chairs, not share. It might have sounded like he said we have share lined up, but no. No, No confirmed report that Cher is at this.
Got it.
She's still, you know, sharing out there.
Sure, yeah.
Cher is still sharing.
Yeah.
Right? Ever see her?
I saw a picture of her just this week.
Not a picture. Have you ever been to see Cher? Have you ever been to a show?
Yeah, in fact, I was on the battleship when she shot that video.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's the only time?
Yeah.
You wouldn't go to another show after being at that?
I was one of the guys in the Navy uniforms.
I don't know this reference, but I know it's a joke. I mean, there was a video?
There's a famous one of her, like late resurgence, you know, Cher videos.
The second act?
Yeah.
Third act, even?
I think this would be second act.
She had, I believe the stat is, number ones in 4 decades. That's why they can't get her at the Duster Challenge.
Yeah,
it's too big.
Right. Yep.
60s, 70s, 80s, 90s.
I don't remember if I could turn back time, it might be that video.
Yeah, that would be one of those
songs.
That
I'm thinking of from the, that's on some sort of Navy.
Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves, If I Could Turn Back Time. I Found Someone. So, I mean,
the theme from,
I Got You, Babe.
The theme from Moonlighting.
That's not Cher.
Well, she's in the movie. You know.
Moonlighting?
No, not
Moonstruck.
Moonstruck. Thank you. Thank you. Moonlighting with Cybill Shepherd and Bruce Willis.
Yes, it was. And that's a great theme song. But it's not Cher.
Yeah, right.
You know who it is? Al Jarreau.
Wow. I think that's right.
I think it's right.
It's a good job. Al Jarreau.
Sometimes you just can't, you don't have time to look it up.
Who saw Al Jarreau coming in today?
Al Jarreau. Welcome everyone to the show for the first time ever, probably. I mean, has anybody ever not been mentioned by us? Today we had Threesus mentioned.
What?
Okay, happy Friday. We'll be right back. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.